The Pensions Commission will come to order. I hope the word got out. The House is going in at 10 today and has a caucus at 9. Correct. So we're really only going to deal with the four or five bills here that should not be complex in nature. So let's just start. We have two individual bills that have some urgency. Representative Latz and Senator Kelly, don't know if you're here, but Representative Latz. And these two individual bills are ones that have a timing issue involved. Morning.
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 Tell us what you've got here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. On February 21, 2005, David Day, who was a St. Louis Park police officer, was killed in Iraq. He had been called up as a part of the National Guard obligations out of Minnesota. He was residing in St. Louis Park at the time with his wife. And he had been together with his wife, but not as husband and wife, since high school. When he was killed in Iraq, St. Louis Park Police Chief Luce went to his wife's place of work to inform her of the death. And it was later determined that there were some difficulties in connection with Officer Day's pension, and specifically the survivor's benefits. Officer Day had worked for the city of St. Louis Park as a police officer for about 2.5 years. It turns out he had also had some previous government service in other communities. So when it was all added up together, he had the required 3 years for vesting. However, he had only been married for less than 1 year. And because the death was not specifically service-related in connection with his duties as a St. Louis Park police officer, the survivor's benefits were not payable to his wife, Amy. It is the intention of the bill that I introduced, along with Senator Kelly in the Senate, to seek to have those survivor's benefits payable to Amy.
Okay. So, members, the issues here are fairly straightforward. Seems like the question is, you can see on point three there that because of the age of the involved survivor, that this is a very expense of $346,000. And so if the commission decides that it wants to waive the length of the requirement, there would be the question of who should pick up that cost. The fund internally, should St. Louis Park as a community also participate in that? The fund's got a slight deficiency right now. What do members think? I should mention that PERA is concerned about the, well, Ms. Vanek, it's concerned about the precedential nature here, but I think in terms of the the waiving the requirement, I don't think anybody would think this is going to be a common occurrence, this particular fact situation. Ms. Vanek. So one of the possibilities would be the BRA board has not had a chance to review this. They don't meet until mid or late May. We could do something that allowed them to consider the matter also. Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanek, PERA director. This is a departure from what the law allows, and we have consistently not supported provisions that would pay out of the fund benefits that weren't otherwise anticipated and pre-funded in the terms of how the actuary determines who is going to be entitled to what benefit. So because I have not had an opportunity to bring this to the PERA Board of Trustees, I have not an answer for you today what their specific position would be. So if you wanted to give it to the board the authority to grant this benefit if they so chose, that is at least an option for them to at least have an opportunity to first consider this. Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think we do, does anybody know what the federal benefits are here, or are there particular benefits in St. Louis Park? Do we know what the package of benefits that are available for this young man was a National Guard member? So is there a National Guard benefit also? Chief, do you?
Mr. Chairman, we have Captain Mark Ortner here with us today, and we also have the city manager, Tom Harmoning, and Senator Kelly has joined us. Mark, you had some remarks you wanted to make, and maybe answer the question, too.
My name is Mark Ortner. I'm a captain of the St. Louis Park Police Department. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the city of St. Louis Park, the St. Louis Park Police Department, and other peace officers throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm asking for your support in the actions from your commission to ensure that Amy Day, Officer Day's wife, receives a pension that she's entitled to from Officer Day. Officer Day started his service to the communities in Minnesota outside of St. Louis Park and was actually working for his hometown of Morris as a community service officer prior to working for us. He started with the St. Louis Park Police Department as a community service officer and then was sworn in as a full-time officer a short time after that. And went through his probationary period, successfully completed it, was an excellent officer, and was going to have a long and successful career with the city of St. Louis Park. While working for the St. Louis Park, shortly after he was called up for active duty, he came into my office and explained to me that he was going to be overseas and asked that I be available to Amy should she have any needs or problems while he was gone. And, of course, I said that we'd be willing to do that along with any other member of the department that was going to assist him. And he kind of told me a story. He repeatedly would just start beaming whenever he talked about Amy. It was his sweetheart. He'd been with her ever since high school. And he was explaining that he had just bought her a car before he was leaving and how excited she was going to be with it. And when he sat back, he stated, well, actually, it's for me because I don't want to have to worry about her getting that old car of ours started while I'm overseas. And he always had a concern for Amy. And I believe if he would have been working in St. Louis Park and stopped to render aid to people that were injured and was killed at that time, there'd be no question that he was killed in the line of duty. What occurred was he was called up by the state of Minnesota to serve in the National Guard. He was sent over to Iraq where they said he was supposed to serve. And as he was driving down the roadway, came across some other Minnesota guardsmen that had been injured. He exited his vehicle, went out, and was rendering aid. As he was trying to medevac these people out, he was killed by an explosive device. I really believe that he still was killed in the line of duty, which is a clause that's written in the state statutes, saying that if you're killed in the line of duty, there is not that one-year requirement. He happened to be working for the state of Minnesota for the National Guard at that time. But he would have done the same kind of service, putting his life on the line for anybody in the state of Minnesota or for the city of St. Louis Park. And to differentiate between dying serving St. Louis Park citizens themselves or dying because the state of Minnesota sent him over to Iraq and he was protecting other guardsmen, I think is not perhaps proper. His death was a tragedy to St. Louis Park, to the state of Minnesota, and especially to his family. And I think it would be a tragedy to deny him the care that he had for his wife by denying her the pension that I believe he is entitled to.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Benson.
Wasn't your question what are the federal death benefits he's going to get?
We'll get there.
Wasn't that?
Okay, thank you.
I do not know what the federal death benefits are. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That was a question.
So, I mean, the issue is fairly simple here in terms of if we're going to make an exception here, we roughly know the amount, $346,000, and we need to decide if we want to make an exception, And if who should pay that? Should it come out of the fund? Senator Larson, what's people's thinking
here? Mr. Chairman, I think the amendment 257, I think, you know, the PERA board should look at the benefit from the National Guard. Also, there's a bill pending before Congress that would, I think, pay $250,000 for anyone killed over there. So I think we should give the PERA board an opportunity to look at all those issues.
House members, what do you think? Does that make some sense? Representative Wardlow.
I have a son that's going back to Iraq for another tour in September, so maybe I'm not a good one to talk because I'm prejudiced, and I'm also retired military, so I don't care what's going to happen. I think the family deserves it, and I agree with the captain. But like I said, I'm definitely prejudiced in this case.
Would you see 257 as
If we do that, would there's a chance that PERA would deny? Is that
they could, and if they did, we can take the matter up again. If we think that they've made a bad decision, Senator Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I would support the 257 amendment. We don't have enough information relative to the benefit. I don't know that that's controlling, but I would like to know that. I guess I'm going to have to put my faith in the fund to take the matter up based on maybe that issue as well. So I'm prepared to support the 257 amendment.
I'd like to move that amendment.
Larson moves 257.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Burke.
I think you'd also want to adopt either 250 or 251. Technical cleanups.
Okay, I think the 250, there's some technical cleanup necessary, and so let's, and I think retroactivity makes sense. That deals with the
when it starts.
Amount of the, when the benefit would start. And so I think clearly retroactivity makes sense if you do it. So is that, I think that makes sense. So let's move 250 first, Senator Larson.
I'll move that.
Senator Larson moves 250. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed. Motion adopted. And then Senator Larson moves 257. Discussion. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for your consideration of this proposal. I just want to make sure that Captain Ortner and other members of the St. Louis Park team can communicate clearly what the widow can expect, and that is that the PRA will look at this and make a decision based on all the facts available to them, and then the possibility exists that it would come back to the legislature if we're concerned about the decision that the PERA makes.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Latz.
I have a question. Would another way to handle it possibly be to adopt a provision that would grant the benefits, but those benefits would be offset by any benefits that were to be approved coming from Congress in connection with this kind of a death?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I think we need the information first. I think the amendment 257 will take care of that.
I think it gives the flexibility. The board probably meets late May or something. May 12th, so we're going to still be here, actually. So I think we need to be a little careful just to figure out what all the pieces are here. So, and again, I think this is a pretty unique situation. So
let's hope so.
Okay, so did we vote on Larson Amendment?
Not to
the Not yet. On the Larson, 257. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, motion adopted. Then Senator Larson moves that this be incorporated in the omnibus bill that's under consideration by amendment by the authors. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
appreciate
Mr. Chairman.
It. If I could just ask, well, maybe we could. Is St. Louis, we'll ask later if we need to. This is on this issue of cost sharing. We'll worry about it later. St. Louis Park might want to consider that matter.
No.
Thank you. Okay. Let's do the Michelle bill. That one should be fairly quick.
It's a tab 5.
Tab 5. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could ask TRA and then Mr. Keith Pock to come to the table. Mr. Chair and members, this is language that has been worked on just over the last 2 weeks. That's why it's not in bill form, but I appreciate you taking a little time this morning. And I think these two gentlemen can lay it out for us, and we can consider it for inclusion. I don't know who wants to go first here.
Go.
Luther?
Let's just hear from TRA.
Good morning, Senator and Commission members. My name is Luther Thompson from TRA. This issue deals with the rollover of what we call the ELSA accounts, the earnings limitation savings accounts that we have when a member retires and goes back to work. The situation for TRA is that we've now hundreds of these accounts, and the member comes in and has a choice to make, or didn't have a choice to make. He has to take a lump sum distribution and pay the tax on it. We discovered that when this issue arose, there were some questions about annuitizing these, but we've also found that in an inquiry to the official actuary, Siegel, we've got some information back that says that you can make these, you can allow a lump sum, the lump sum to be rolled over to an IRA. I have provided copies of the two memorandums to Commission staff earlier this week. If you have specific questions about it, I'd be happy to answer those. But we feel comfortable with the private letter ruling that addressed drops, which are lump sum rollovers for a person who retires and doesn't start to collect the annuity, but it is accumulated, versus the situation where we have, and the IRS seems to have agreed that those are eligible for rollovers to IRAs.
And the 259 clarifying language, you've reviewed that? Need a copy
yes,
of it?
Yes, I did. I've seen that previously, and that does clarify it in TRA.
It was language by the Services Tax Council of the Variable Annuity Life Insurance Company.
I haven't seen that, no.
Oh, all right, we better.
It's right here.
Got somebody from the Attorney General.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sir.
Yeah, essentially the language just instructs.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm sorry, Keith Pock
with
AIG Valic.
Thank you.
Yeah, we had a tax counsel. We had a number of our participants. We serve retirement programs for K-12 and some of the higher ed institutions in the state, many of the municipalities in the state. And these participants who are also annuitants at retirement under the three defined benefit programs and then later became rehired and therefore became part of the ELSA program. Then when they subsequently retire for the second time and then achieve this lump sum, obviously many of them want to be able to roll that over into their qualified program, whether it's a IRA or a 403B or 457 program, whatever, which is allowed under Internal Revenue Code Section 402C as an eligible rollover distribution. And simply what we're trying to achieve here is adopting language under the code, under the ELSA provision, that simply allows them to make that eligible rollover distribution. And there are several private letter rulings that document the eligibility for those distributions.
Questions? Okay, so we have to start. Michelle moves 245 first, since this is an amendment. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Then Michelle moves 259. Mr. Martin?
Members, 259 is language that adapts some suggestions from the Valic Council after they had taken a look at the 245 language and essentially does the same thing perhaps in a little more refined way. So it also helps with the tax planning aspect of this.
Okay, on the 259 discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion adopted. Anybody else want to testify? Okay, then Senator Michelle moves 245 amendment with the 259 amendment on it be incorporated in the omnibus bill. that's currently be under consideration. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion adopted. Mr. Thompson, could you join us again? This is on the Youngbauer-Abler bill. Or Mr. Austin? Ah, Senator Youngbauer, didn't see you. This is the other bill that's a single-person bill. And I think it's a circumstance where some equities are necessary. Mr. Austin?
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Gary Austin, Executive Director of Teachers Retirement Association. And the bill before you, it deals with a constituent situation where a member, we have the provision where people can make direct payments into our fund and they can use their transfers from their tax shelter annuity vehicles from these 403B accounts or whatever. And this is a situation where this person, the member was on extended leave. She followed the procedure. Our procedure is that we notify the member of the amount of payment due and send them the necessary forms that the member sends the forms to their tax shelter annuity vendor and then sends us a copy of the form so that we know that this action is in place. The procedure worked very well for this person in 2003. We sent the information in April. We got the form back in May and got the payment in May. The member followed the same procedure in 2004, and we sent the information to the member. The member sent the form to her vendor, but we never got the payment. And it was a situation where time expired on this. TRA never did receive the payment, actually, and we have no provision in our law that really allows us to accept late payments. And so we did not feel that we were able to allow payment after the June 30th deadline. And so it's a situation that I think we're very comfortable with the 271 amendment that really just allows a member to make payment for the 2003-2004 year plus interest. And
271 is?
Right.
Okay.
The last one. Right. And that will allow her to make payment for last year, and then the process is you have to make a payment for every year, you know, so that'll allow her then to make also a timely payment for 2005. So she'll be able to rectify the 2004 year, which will then allow her to make payment for 2005 and retire rule of 90 this summer.
Okay, and then the reason we need the reason for consideration this year is I think the person in question, Ms. Holm, is considering retirement this
That's
summer.
That's my understanding. Yes, she would like to retire this summer.
Yes, Ms. Holm, do you just want to raise your hand? Okay, is that correct? Okay. So, I think 271 gets the fund and Ms. Holm where they want to get. So, Representative Tease moves the 271 amendment. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. I think that works, Representative Abler. And, okay.
I'll move the bill.
Senator Larson moves Senate File 1758, 1648, House File, as amended.
Quick question,
be incorporated the omnibus. Senator Bedsold. So,
quick question raised by the memo. Why did TRA wait until June 30th to contact the member and then give her virtually no time to make the payment? What was the delay there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bedsold, the normal process is that we have a process in place where when we do not receive the payment by the time it was supposed to be received according to the form that was filled out, we do notify the member. In Mrs. Holmes' situation, she failed to fill in the date, the received date, and so it probably was put off till the last minute because it didn't fit into our normal process because she didn't specify to the vendor when this payment was supposed to be received. So that did not, consequently, we did not call her. We called her on the 29th, which admittedly is late. However, she could have conceivably reacted at least and got some payment to us or got some payment process in place. But it was, admittedly, it was late. But like I said, she had no received date on the form, which there was no indication of really when we were expecting the payment.
Just, Mr. Chair, it seems a little unreasonable, though, to call somebody up and say you got 24 hours to fix this. I think that the fund crowd could have reacted a little earlier, too.
Okay, on the Larson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Thank you,
thank
Representative.
You, Mr. Chair, members, I would like to comment on this packet I got from your committee. This is everything that you wanted to know about the teacher's pension and retirement and never knew how to ask, and I really appreciate it because I had no understanding of this before I started, so you guys do a wonderful job of putting information together.
Staff does do good work. Thank you. Okay, let's take this Smith-Pogemiller Hennepin County Supplemental. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Dave Bergstrom, and I'm the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System. Hennepin County has a supplemental retirement plan that they offer to some of their employees. The investments that they offer are identical to the ones that we offer to unclassified plan employees and to participants of our health care savings plan. Hennepin County's administrative costs were set to go up fairly dramatically. Hennepin County called and asked if MSRS would be willing to administer their plan as far from a record-keeping standpoint. I brought it to the board. The MSRS board is comfortable with doing this if the legislature so authorizes, and that is why the bill is in front of you.
Is there payment? Is MSRS, their costs going to be covered for doing this?
Mr. Chair, the idea would be that Hennepin County, we would enter into an interagency agreement and they would cover any costs of doing this. When we had discussions with Hennepin County, it was considerably less expensive than what they were looking at under their changes being proposed.
And is there anything, staff questions, this is not your core mission in life. Does this in any way divert you from your core mission? Or?
Mr. Chair, it's very consistent with what our core mission is. It's a defined contribution plan. Money goes in. It's the same investment options. We don't think it will be a sizable amount of time. Hennepin County still will be answering the phone calls and doing all of that. We would be mostly handling the records, and we'd be lumping it in with the rest of the business we do.
Okay. And we'll, I think we need these two amendments. Local approval clauses in 273. Is anybody from Hennepin County here?
Mr. Chairman, Smith. Members, I'm Paul Segla, County Benefits Manager. For Hennepin County, and would be pleased to answer any questions that you have.
Representative Smith moves 273.
Yep.
Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion adopted. Smith moves 274. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Questions from the commission. So Smith moves that Senate File 2250, House File 2466, as amended, be incorporated. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, as long as Mr. Bergstrom is up there, could you make a comment, Mr. Bergstrom, about the memo that you wrote to Mr. Nobles regarding the audit of the deferred comp? I mean, just it was in the press, so I just thought, Mr. Chairman, that we should get that on the table and tell us what happened.
Sure. Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom, the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System. I do have copies of my response to the legislative audit report. The legislative auditor audits us on a regular basis. This report was actually a special audit. An MSRS staff raised some allegation about my activities regarding the deferred compensation plan that MSRS also administers. The staff person alleged that we were selling 403B products in addition to the products that we offer through the Minnesota Deferred Compensation Program, and also raised some other financial concerns. The board, as it should have, the staff person raised it to the board president. The board president did call the legislative auditor to look out what turned out to be false allegations. The audit did conclude that no MSRS employees were involved in any financial wrongdoing. And the report also concluded that we were not selling any 403B products or anything that we were not supposed to be doing. The audit did identify some control weaknesses, one of which was in the newspaper. The one specifically addressed in the paper was having two people audit our account that we collect fees from and then pay expenses out of. One staff person is responsible for doing that. I, on an annual basis, look at it. The auditor thought that having two people regularly look at it would make some sense. It's a legitimate issue. So now we're having two staff look at that audit account. They also recommended that the board regularly get a report of the activity in that account, and we have been doing so since November. There were also a couple of transition issues. We recently brought the administrative education and enrollment services into the Minnesota State Retirement System so that we could provide sort of a one-stop shop for people who come in asking about retirement. We can also now handle their deferred comp calls, answer any questions they have about the health care savings plan. During that transition, when we were hooking up to our record keeper, two employees were inadvertently given access to see some other accounts administered by our record keeper. That was turned off. We also verified that no other plans had any access to our accounts. During the transition, we had to have connectivity to the record keeper, and they were inadvertently given that extra change. We did, during the transition, we were connecting to the record keeper. We were implementing a new phone system. We did extend the terms of a contract to a computer consultant without going through another RFP. They were there doing one project. During all of the transition, we could not afford the time to take 4 months to enter into another contract, go through the RFP process. So that person we did have do some other duties for us. That was the other issue raised. Our current contract with our record keeper allows us to have the record keeper perform other duties. The audit recommended that we more formally adopt those in amendment form, and we will be doing so as well. All of the auditor's recommendations have been implemented. The transition actually results in lowering the expenses to the plan by about $1 million. The board in May will be considering lowering the deferred comp fees for the eighth time in 13 years. Some of the fees have been lowered as much as 1% over the last 13 years, which in total results in a savings of well over $10 million a year for participants. And I've handed out my response. And we have implemented all of the control issues that they raised.
Okay, so we'll try to review this and maybe take it up for further discussion at another point.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to explain what we're doing in deferred comp. We're excited about it and very proud of the program. So.
Appreciate it. Senator Larson, okay. Okay, why don't we take up Bedsold Westerberg? The last two items, they've been on the agenda before. We've had discussion, and we just need to make a decision. Senator Bedsold, what's your thinking on the... Mr. Martin?
Members, you have some items in your packet relating to Senate File 235, House File 375. This would be tab 11. This was put together before today's agenda was shortened. That's why it's tab 11. If you pull the paper clip off, you have two items behind the staff memo. One is an unofficial engrossment of what the commission did previously on this bill. Largely what you did is to separate the disability benefit provision changes that are requested and put them into the disability portion of PERA police and fire law, and to leave the membership issues as proposed.
So 104 is on there?
Yes.
Okay.
There were one or two amendments that were added, and the unofficial engrossment picks those up.
Sheila may be raising some questions.
If you did want to pursue any of the additional amendments that are in the staff materials for Senate File 235, the actual amendment is drawn to the bill as introduced and would have to be technically modified in order to fit into the unofficial engrossment, but that's something we normally do anyway. The other piece that you have in your packet is the Dash 276 amendment. The provenance of this is, with respect to legislative authors, unknown. This is some language that PERA has requested having to do with the disability coverage if you were to adopt this concept. And if this is of interest, I don't know where Ms. Vanek, if she has an author or just how.
She brought it to my office. So.
Okay. But it's in your packets for your consideration. So those are the three materials that you have before you. This is a combination of civilian positions with firefighting duties and including them in a public safety pension plan is the broad issue.
And members, I was thinking, 104 is in the engrossed version. I was thinking we want to consider 107 and 108 also.
No, you did 107.
We did 107. That's in the engrossment. All right. And did we think about 108 or we did not?
It's not my memory that you did 108.
Okay, but 108 looks like one we ought to consider also.
Mr. Chair, I believe that was the intent, is to not allow people having two different pensions crossing into each other. This is an idea to have the current people who are city employees to be able to work as volunteer firefighters, but not to be able to fatten both pensions in the process.
So I think Bedsell moves 108. Mr. Rice?
Mr. Chairman, I think when this issue came up the last time you considered it, we had indicated that the fund would be opposed to 108, or not the fund, the city would be opposed to 108, in that we think that this issue about concurrent service has been litigated twice in Ramsey County, once in Hastings, well, in Ramsey County Court, once in Hastings' case, because it involved an action with the state auditor, and more recently in Roseville, and the courts in both cases found that there isn't anything in law that prohibits an individual who's a member of PRA from also being a member of a volunteer relief association as long as they're providing service to both in both capacities. And we think that the 108 amendment as it's proposed would really be a standard which, you know, no other department or relief association has held to.
But in their isn't there a difference here, though? This is PERA, police, and fire.
And those are
basically so you're basically in two funds.
Mr. Chairman, they are PRA, police, and fire. Both of those issues in the Roseville case and the Hastings case involved that. Yes, they were. And the issue is on this one that there are currently some members who are of the Spring Lake Park, Blaine's, Moundsview Department who are members of the PRA, police, and fire fund currently. And who also get volunteer service credit for activities they do when they're not doing their full-time job. They come back and work on their time off to get service credit in the Relief Association.
Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair and members, if I can clarify, there is a provision, and I can't cite specifically the subdivision, but in 353, our governing chapter, that says an individual cannot get credit in the paracoordinated or police and fire if they are also getting credit for that exact same service in the Relief Association. So an individual can get Relief Association credit for separate service performed at a separate time as long as they're not on the job earning credit in the Police and Fire Fund or coordinated plan at that particular time. So they're looked at two separate service.
So this amendment goes further than?
Appears to me that it would.
And
so maybe we don't need it.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like current law takes care of it.
I think so.
Okay.
I think current law takes care of it. Okay, so then we should look at the 276, I guess. Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair, just so it's clear, the PERA...
Yeah, please, yes, state your general...
...is still opposed to this. They believe that while they understand what they're trying to achieve here and that there is a need that they're trying to address, they would appreciate it if they'd go back and look for other alternatives. But that being said, if the commission and the legislature so determined that they want to proceed with this to see how this would work, at a minimum, we ask that the non-duty disability benefit be very specific, and that because these individuals are working in two roles, if they are deemed to be unable to perform their job in firefighting service, but there's absolutely no reason they can't go back to their regular city job, non-duty disability benefit not be paid, and that the individual be moved back into the coordinated plan for that subsequent service. So that's a little bit more of a tightening provision to protect the fund. But that being said, the board still does oppose this bill.
Mr. Zickman, why not look for other alternatives?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, the only other alternative is just to hire them as career firefighters. We need firefighters. These are firefighters. The only difference is what they're doing in their non-firefighting time, and we just don't control the call volume. The department's experienced a 45% increase in market value in the past 9 years, about a 12% increase in population, and a 2% increase in call volume, so less than a 0.25% a year. I'm proud that we don't have a lot of fire calls, but we still need firefighters for when we do have them. So the only alternative we have explored for the past 2 years, other alternatives. We're left with this choice or simply hiring career firefighters to service those two or three or four calls, whatever may come in 1 week, none the next, 10 the next. We don't know when they come. We don't know how frequently. We just go off that history. The difference is what they're doing. You couldn't tell the difference between somebody who's working for me full-time and somebody who's working for the city because they'll be on every call. They'll go to 100% of the calls. I would add, and there is one other alternative that's been and is being pursued by a number of departments and has been, and Representative Thiessen's involved in this. Many of the career departments are into emergency medical services, but there's state statute covering something called PSA, primary service areas. The vast majority of the career departments, the vast majority of their calls are medical-based. 80-85% of their call volume is medical-based. That's how they're justifying their work volume. SBM can't get into the medical arena. We're prohibited by law from getting there. So I still need some other duties, and I see Representative Thiessen is very familiar with this issue. A group, I think 36, 37 cities, have been pursuing that for a number of years. So we're left with what do we have these people do? And I'm just suggesting that you would help and support our communities in maintaining an efficient body of government by letting them do some other duties. The real test is that they respond, and they'll respond. The real test is that they're prepared, qualified, and trained to respond. They'll be prepared, qualified, and trained to respond. They'll do everything that we need for the firefighting. It's just that other time. So I don't know what other options we have. Thank you.
I'm kind of unclear why the board would oppose this. I'm not totally clicking on why.
Mr. Chair, the PERA Board of Trustees views the Police and Fire Fund as a plan for career professional individuals in law enforcement and firefighting. Those who serve in firefighting in this other capacity are more like volunteers who have a regular public job but also are serving the public in a very good way in providing, their abilities for fire suppression and those types of issues. We believe that's what the volunteer plans were created for. There's a prohibition for this double coverage. I don't know if that's something that, is an alternative option to allow double coverage for individuals who do this particular serve in this particular way, but they are very concerned about opening up the door to including more individuals. We're having a difficult time as it is in dealing with particularly the disability issue in the Police and Fire Fund, and determining when somebody is truly injured in the line of duty and not in the line of duty. Now, Mr. Zickman and Mr. Rice have done a good job in trying to tighten that language in this provision, but we are still very concerned that this could open the door to a lot more people getting into the plan and it becoming more and more difficult to really monitor the disability issue.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of questions, Mr. Zickman and Ms. Vanek. This was in place, and the people that were people and also volunteers, would they tend to not respond to the call if they can't get credit in both places?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, the bill's before you because we've been unable to get individuals to respond. I do have two individuals right now working for the City of Blaine, an engineer and a forester, that one of the reasons we brought this forward is they discover that their colleagues and people working side by side are in the PNF fund and they're not, and they're doing the exact same thing at the exact same drill. They've said, you know, we don't see us doing this long term. They can't be in the volunteer fund because they're in the coordinated plan. They're getting payment from the city, that is their employer. So yeah, I think to answer your question directly, yes, they would say no thanks. We used to have five. Three have dropped out.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Zickman and Ms. Vanek, did you talk about this at all of being a pilot project with a report back to us after a certain length of time, say 2 years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the way we've approached that is we've made it very specific to the three cities of Spring Lake Park, Blaine, and Moundsview. It's difficult to say, you know, we'll do it for 2 years, and then if it doesn't work, take them out. But we could say in 2 years or 3 years, we'll report back to you. We're talking about 5 to 10 people into a 10,000 plan fund that will make all of the contributions, the same contributions. There won't be any difference there. We've had a number of other communities that have expressed interest in this, and we've worked with them to say, you know, we are one of the larger departments in the state. In 3 years, 4 years, we could be the third largest with the growth going on in Blaine. And we have a desperate need, but a critical need. And, you know, so the legislature could, you know, determine that simply by not expanding the bill beyond those three communities for 2 or 3 years and see how it works. I would like...
Or if it works.
Or if it works also. And I would like
you
to
mention to me that this may not actually happen.
Appreciate, Mr. Chairman and members, that the cities are looking at this as another tool to try. They're not so sure as they work through their city service needs and an engineering tech, you know, has to respond to a fire, yet there's a inspection that has to occur. Or they have four engineering techs and they only allow two of them to do this. So it's not anything that's a magic pill for us, but given the alternative of hiring a dozen career firefighters and doubling our budget, they would at least like the opportunity to explore this. All three cities have passed resolutions and have discussed this at length at workshop.
Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, we had some limited discussion with the board about other alternatives, and I understand Mr. Zickman's been working on this for a couple of years. I can only represent that the board took the position that they are concerned about opening it up to individuals who have these dual capacities for the city, and therefore they oppose the bill.
They got a minimum. We want to put 276 on, so Bedsold moves 276.
Yes.
Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Does anybody else want to testify? Morning. Good morning, Mr. Stockstead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Committee. My name is Mike Stockstead. I'm the president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association. We, too, oppose this legislation. This isn't what the PERA Police and Fire Program was set up to do. In the particular case we're talking about right now, even if you limited it to that, you've got city employees who would be participants in a non-city fire department. The city does not own these fire department. Limiting it to these cities, you're going to have the same argument months from now as you do today in that how can you possibly do this for one city and not do it for another? So you're going to have volunteers, if you will, using that term, in the city of St. Louis Park who work for the city of Golden Valley that would like to get credit for that time as well within their plans. You've got a Social Security argument that you've got to deal with. This is the problem we ran into when we talked about our paramedics, trying to bring in our paramedics. Police and fire program doesn't even cover all of our fire department employees that are full-time employees to date. So, you know, before we expand it to include volunteers who get a program, a private program, we need to correct the internal problems first. This also
who doesn't it cover?
We don't cover our inspectors, our investigators, and our fire educators. We also don't cover our dispatchers. This also circumvents all the discussions and agreements that we've had regarding our disability issues that we've had with PERA, the League of Cities, the MPPOA to date. We're trying to address those issues. We've implemented some legislation last year. We've got another bill that's sitting on both bodies on the floor right now that goes a little bit further to correct those issues. This basically flies in the face of all those discussions. This also has far-reaching implications on our collective bargaining, our pay equities. We have systems in place on what we have to abide by, regulated by the state. So if we start meshing these programs, those employees that have certain points based on what their benefits are, what their duties are and obligations, are going to fly into the face of what we now have to present within our bargaining process. Talking about the definition of firefighter, it was stated that it's the same, making it comparable to a police definition. Well, that's not the case. We don't have fire post board. There is no such thing as fire certification in the state of Minnesota. There is a private entity that offers you a card if you want to pay and go through the process to purchase this membership, if you will, into receiving this. We do not have any due process in that system. We do not have any state oversight. It would also disqualify our state college system and completely ignore the State Board of Fire Training and Education, in addition to any of our fire department academies like the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, Duluth, or St. Cloud academies, where our neighboring communities even participate in those, where we'll bring in Cloquet firefighters and train them through our Duluth Academy, firefighters in Austin, Albert Lee, and so forth, and our Rochester Academy, and several in the Minneapolis Academy. These people wouldn't then qualify if all of this were picked up. Regarding provision, if it were adopted on this hazardous duty versus non-hazardous duty, this is an ongoing process of discussion on those effects. To not qualify a person for their training is ludicrous. We're going to light a building on fire in Roseville, I think, tonight. Put those people in a fire situation. We're going to try and bring them up to speed on the proper processes and how to do this. So if somebody were to get hurt tonight or killed, which happens actually on fire grounds, the proposal as proposed here wouldn't cover those individuals. That's just improper. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on our duty and non-duty disabilities. That shouldn't be done here today. It's a part of a bigger picture. And bringing in private citizens into the fire and police program is also not the way to go with this.
Mr. Chair, does the House have to go in session at 9? Is that
caucus. So I think we can run a little over here.
Okay, well, maybe we should just lay it over so we can have more time to think about it. So they're pressed for time. So.
I'm sensing some uncomfortableness on the House side.
Chairman. I think so. Probably reaching not prepared to go forward at this time. Okay.
What do you guys think? Slow down.
Later.
I think let's give it further consideration, and this one I think is not as consensus as everything we've done to date. So, is there anything that could be? Has there been a lot of discussion between the...
Mr. Chairman, this is the first time Mr. Stockstead shared any of these issues with us.
Okay. Why don't we have some discussion there, and then let's visit next week and see where we're at. Okay? Okay, we'll set this aside then. Thank you. Ms. Vanek, stay in the loop.
Mr. Chair, quickly before you adjourn.
I want to do the MRF one.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. MRF, I'm sorry. MRF, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Number two. Oh, Representative Osmond.
Representative
Osmond. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to know if be possible for the two groups, if I'd like to get more information on that, if we could meet with them and maybe with our staff also to where I can get better informed as to what the issues are and see if we can find some middle ground on this.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to arrange a meeting with Mr. Stockstead and, say, Representative Osmond, since he's well aware of fire service issues and maybe go through this.
I think that'd be good.
So first we've heard from what Mr. Stockstead said, and I think there's a whole other side of the story. So maybe we could set up a meeting with Representative Osmond and Mr. Stockstead and see if we can come to some.
I think that'd be good.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd feel more comfortable if it was a pilot that was kind of reported back to us on a regular basis and that during this period of time, we wouldn't consider other bills that are similar.
Okay. Okay, I think...
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, then let's go back to the MRF one. I think maybe that your House caucus doesn't start right on time, does it?
Well, we might.
No, but we might miss donuts.
They might when you're not there. All right, Representative Kelleher.
Connie Bernardi's.
Okay, we've been through this. I think we adopted... Do we have a gross version of this one?
No.
Okay, we adopted... Well, did we adopt 66 and 58, or did I just put yes that we should?
I don't think we adopted any
amendments. Okay. I think we clearly need 66 and 58.
So moved.
Bedsold moves 66. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. Bedsold moves 58. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Mr. Chairman, does that have to do with the proposed exclusion?
Yeah, it clarifies it. We could still pull it out if you want. Or we could
I have some questions.
But let's clarify it
at least. Let's clarify it.
Okay. So the 58 clarifies it. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. And then...
there are two in your packets that are technical in nature.
Mr. Martin?
Members, you just had one document, 266, that's passed out. And also in your package, you had a dash 075. The 075 is a local approval, and I believe the author desires to have a local approval. The dash 266 is an author's suggestion based on conversations with Mr. Bicker in the appropriate place to put MRF assets if the state board is going to be involved. Okay. There's also an author's suggestion.
Thiessen moves 75. Local approval. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. I don't have the other one. It's 266. Okay. It's Thiessen moves 266. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion adopted. Okay. Where were we then? Senator Larson?
Yeah. Well, I have some questions because when I look at the salaries of these executive directors and...
It's in the packet.
Is in the packet?
Yes.
Members, there is a letter-sized piece of paper which gives you the information on the statewide plan fund administrator salaries, most current. And those are the ones that are highlighted in the darker color. It includes the recent change that was approved by the LCC related to the Employee Relations Subcommittee of the LCC, and that would be the 1204 number.
Senator Larson.
Well, you know, I'm concerned about these salaries when I look at the responsibilities of some of these executive directors, and when you got TRA at 85%, you got others at 95%, and then you got some that want to be excluded. I just think that we have to have some fairness and some consistency in this whole business of, you know, you got the top at 135,000, and what's 85%? What's TRA 85% of the governor's salary? What's that 109 or something? I just don't think I'm ready to and as I see it, this bill proposes that they be excluded from the cap. Is that right?
Ms.
Mr. Chair,
We're the only local fund that's currently in the cap. Came about when former Senator Don Moe got in a fight with former Senator John Chenoweth, who was executive director of MRF, and he put us in the cap. And so we're just trying to finally rectify that.
You know what I think? Why don't we have I think it puts you in an uncomfortable position.
It does.
Why don't you sit back and have the city and Representative Kelleher deal with this issue?
Thank
I think
you.
That puts you in an uncomfortable position.
It does. Thank you.
What's the city's case for doing this again? You stated it the other day, but...
Mr. Chairman, Pat Bourne, Chief Financial Officer for the city. City Council has specifically taken an affirmative vote to support this bill. We have also taken a position on the salary cap as well. The city's view is that decisions like this should be made by the governing board and... I think that's the genesis of that. I'm not knowledgeable about all the salary caps that exist for other people who have similar kinds of jobs in state government or elsewhere. So I'm not an expert on salary levels and comparability. We haven't done any studies to do that. We're taking a more global position about salary caps and the appropriateness of salary caps.
And you mean that in a broader sense. It's not just related to the – you meant it for a lot of administrative offices. The city has apparently come in over the years for many more exemptions than they've gotten. But for – across the board, has totally aside from the pension issue and stuff. And this salary gets set by the board, not by the city, correct? Okay.
Yeah.
I think – do members understand the issue? I think, Senator Larson, you do want to – if we lift it from the cap, staff suggests we need to talk about 59, Mr. Martin, the Amendment 59?
Yes, members. If this change in the bill would cause a considerable change in the compensation of this position, the incumbent had a service credit purchase a couple of years ago approved, and if this throws the anticipated salary history of the position, the benefit, the full actuarial value is not the actual value of the service credit purchase as it turns out. And so 059 is a some attempt to try and address the issue of when a statutory salary change impacts on a benefit that's obtained by a service credit purchase.
Mr. Chair, I'm not familiar with this
okay.
issue. I'm just not able to respond to
okay.
the issue.
Mr. Chair.
Who are you pointing to? Ms. Vanek? Representative Wardlow?
Mr. Chair.
Is it on this issue? This.
Well, let's...
Let's hear from Ms. Vanek on this particular issue.
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanek, para-director. On this particular issue, I raise concern that it's isolated to one individual. First of all, when the service credit purchase was calculated, it assumed a 5% growth in her salary to full retirement age, and clearly that has not occurred in the history since she made the purchase. And we have other individuals who make service purchases, particularly in the police and fire fund, who have an opportunity to work overtime in their final years, where the salary may increase more than the assumed 5% that on which we base the actual purchase. So if you do it for Ms. Johnson, why wouldn't it be applied to others who maybe have increased salaries in their later years? I just am concerned.
And should it be applied to everybody, or are you arguing consistency, or are you
arguing? I'm arguing consistency, Mr. Chair, and my understanding is the city had not intended to escalate the salary significantly. We already assume
the board. It wouldn't be the city. It would be the board.
Okay. And the city and the assumptions under PERA current statute already assume a 5% growth in salary on individuals. So everything we forecast on her benefit calculation is that her salary will increase 5% over time, and the service purchase was calculated assuming 5%. So I think it's covered. Now, I could be wrong. If they increased your salary 20% consistently in the last 5 years, I'd kind of have to come back and say, this is a huge cost to the fund. But she's one of many people who have made purchases and those other people don't pay extra.
We could put language in it that said that it can't be more than 5% a year. If that's what you're assuming, we could theoretically do that.
That is
what 059 does.
The thrust of all 059 does talk about if the salary increase actually works out to be more than the 5% that had been assumed.
Yeah. So maybe the 059.
Mr. Chairman, would that include overtime pay too?
I don't think
this aren't subject to
Mr. Chairman. Well, we went through this with the with TRA and how they were loading up some of the high 5 year averages.
Yes.
And I just think we just have to be careful because there is a tendency, and these people are wise. They know how to build up the high five very nicely. And I'm just a little concerned about we have some kind of control on that.
Well, I think you'd want the 059
doesn't.
If it stays in.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Larson moves the 059. Ms. Vanek, with that understanding of the way the amendment's structured, does that make you a little more comfortable?
Mr. Chair, again, that's fine, but again, it's applying to one individual, and I think the commission may want to consider taking this discussion later on in the interim or whatever, if you want to, about actual purchases made by individuals who have higher salary increases in their later years, if that's a concern of the commission.
Okay, Larson moves the 059. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay. Any other discussion on the bill as amended? Okay, so Larson.
Move for consideration under the.
Okay, Larson moves that House File 853 be incorporated as amended. I think it's in good enough shape where it can be in that bill. Okay, people comfortable enough? Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Members, we'll meet. The House has to.
Sure.
If there's anybody in the audience who wasn't here earlier, the House is going in earlier than expected today, and they have caucuses, so we have to quit now.
Mr. Chair, could I do a little cleanup first?
Yes.
Okay. The pension bill that passed out here had the firefighter study language.
One sec. Before members leave, I think we'll probably meet next Thursday. Okay.
I removed that so it wouldn't have to go to the Senate Finance Committee. The House kept it in, and it has now went through the House fiscal. I need to have that language put back into the second Senate bill. I don't know whether you want a motion now or at some point, just so we can. So the Senate has the language in that we took out, but it's still
okay,
in the
so
House.
Let me understand. So what you're thinking is you want to have that in the bill that's moving now?
Yeah, well, I've already moved it out of my bill, but it's still in Representative Smith's
that's
bill.
Correct.
So I just
where you want to get is you want to have it. The intent is to have it in the bill, actually.
Yes.
Because why do you need us to do anything then? Just put it back
well,
in.
Well, I have to put it back in because the second bill has to go to the Senate Finance Committee where the first one did not. So I need it for the Senate side. Representative Smith apparently doesn't need it, but I need something in here that leaves here that addresses that issue.
So what do you want us to do?
I'll just move to put it back in to the second bill, and then Representative Smith can do what he needs.
Second bill.
Well, if I just do it now, it'll be.
Oh, the amendment that you're offering.
Yes.
Okay. With all this stuff that we're
yes.
doing. Okay.
Put the firefighter study into the
second okay.
bill.
So you have authority to do that, Senator Benson.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. Because it was already adopted.
Okay.
I think we'll meet next Thursday, probably, it looks like. Floor sessions are going to start to be a problem, but we'll get back to those other bills. So meeting adjourned.